afternoon. I'm Katie, and this is Kelly. And we are from Advice and Aid Pregnancy Center in Overland Park, Kansas, Kansas City area. And I'm the nurse manager.
And hi, I'm Kelly Carter, and I do our after-abortion support, and I'm the coordinator.
Yeah. So we're here to talk to you today a little bit about post-abortive assessment, which I know we all have post-abortive services and healing ministries that we're associated with in our centers, but this is sort of a medical model for the post-abortive woman. And so that's kind of what we're going to go into today, is the medical side and then also the spiritual and emotional side of post-abortive healing, but in kind of the immediate time frame right after the abortion, within 4 to 6 weeks. So post-abortive assessment it's multidisciplinary. So it's an appointment that we schedule with clients who, when we found out that they have aborted. And we try to get them to come in 4 to 6 weeks after the abortion. And because by that time, her pregnancy test should be negative. The HCG should be out of her system. And she should have a negative pregnancy test by that time. And so she'll meet with a nurse who does a physical assessment, and then she has an opportunity to meet with a client advocate, but not just any client advocate, one who's specifically trained in abortion healing. And at our center, that's Kelly and the people that Kelly has trained.
And I was just going to say, so I've been with the Advice and Aid for 5 years, and prior to that, I did post-abortive healing in my church for 10. So I've done post-abortive healing for about 15 years and facilitated our Bible studies for the past 5 years at Advice and Aid. And then also worked in the clinic as needed as a client advocate, or also talking to our wounded ladies in the clinic, and then sharing a little bit of my own testimony. And then we came up with this wonderful post-abortive assessment, which has just been wonderful, and I'm just excited to share this.
Yeah, so this is our little center in Overland Park. We're right close to the highway, 435, around Kansas, which goes around Kansas City. So it's really easy to get to, and we draw from a large area, not just Kansas City, but we're just 2 miles from the state line. So we draw from Kansas City, Missouri, as well as Nebraska and Colorado, and lately Texas. So in 2016, and this is just a little bit of a history about when we moved here, we used to be in a building down the street, but in 2016 we were preparing to move to this building. And what you can't see from this picture is, if I'm standing going into our door, behind me is the largest abortion provider in Northeast Kansas. And so it's just 150 steps from our door. And so every morning we're driving into our parking lot and seeing that facility and seeing the cars driving in. And so we were anxious about moving in. We were excited about moving there, but also wondering what is this going to mean for us as an organization, and how are things going to change? Because before, people had to be pretty purposeful to find us, right? And so by moving to this location, people tend to wander in that don't mean to be there. And so we knew that was going to be different. So Ruth, our executive director, who's sitting in the front here in the green, arranged for Abby Johnson to come and give an in-service to our client, or our staff and our volunteers. You probably all know who Abby Johnson is. She's from the movie Unplanned. She's the real Abby Johnson, who worked at a Planned Parenthood, which she managed in Texas. So she came to just kind of tell us what to expect, what we might see as we ventured into this proximity to the abortion clinic. And so at that visit, she met with Ruth, and she said, you know, I wonder if you'd consider offering a service, an assessment, medical assessment, for women who've had an abortion. They need it. It's something that they're supposed to do, is to get checked out after their abortion to make sure everything is going okay, that there's no complications. But people aren't seeking it out. People aren't going to get it. And so it was a real need. And as we know, we don't want to just have services to have services. So there always needs to be a need, a demonstrated need with our clients. And so she said that was a demonstrated need with people this close to an abortion clinic. So that's that a seed was planted that day, and about 2 years later is when we started offering post-abortive assessment in 2018. So why do we do it? The medical rationale is pretty clear. There's a medical rationale, and then there's a spiritual and emotional rationale. So I'm here to talk to you about the medical rationale. And we do it because post-abortive care is the standard of care. That's what they're supposed to be checked out. And if you think of any other surgical procedure or even a medical procedure that you have done in the doctor's office, there's a follow-up visit, right, where you make sure things are going well and nothing bad is happening as a result of the procedure. So that's the standard of care in any medical procedure. And this is actually from the label of the abortion pill, Mifeprex or Mifepristone. That's the first of the two abortion pills. The FDA label says patients should follow up with their health care provider approximately 7 to 14 days after the administration of Mifeprex. This assessment is very important to confirm that complete termination of pregnancy has occurred and to evaluate the degree of bleeding. That's the FDA label. This is just from Mayo Clinic, you know, when patients look up, what's it going to be like to have an abortion, recommending after a medical abortion, you'll need to follow up with your provider and make sure you're healing properly and evaluate your uterine size, bleeding, and any signs of infection. So it is the standard of care. However, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology has stated in their most recent practice guidelines that, quote, routine in-person follow-up is not necessary after uncomplicated medical abortion. Clinicians should offer patients the choice of self-assessment or clinical follow-up evaluation to assess medication abortion success. ACOG does, however, acknowledge this FDA warning that includes that patients should seek follow-up care. But then they say that some patients choose not to return for follow-up care, likely due to the high success rates and because patients are able to self-assess abortion completion. We disagree with that. So let's look at those expected effects of chemical abortion. These are the effects that women are told to expect after an abortion. So they're sent home, if they read the literature, they're sent home being told to expect cramping, bleeding, nausea, vomiting, maybe even fever, chills, headache, and diarrhea. So I got these from that same Mayo Clinic website. So then let's take a look at some of the symptoms and signs and symptoms of abortion complications. Look familiar? So how's a woman supposed to differentiate the expected results and normal signs and symptoms from a pregnancy or abortion complication? And that's a fair question, because often she cannot, and it can have devastating consequences for her and her future fertility. In fact, some of the infections that can come after an abortion don't present with fever at all, so it might not be caught by her. She may attribute the signs and symptoms to something else. So without a medical evaluation of some sort, she's not necessarily going to know she's had a complication. The other thing is, even if the worst doesn't happen and she doesn't end up getting a life-ending infection or bleeding, hemorrhaging or something, the complications from abortion can affect her future fertility. So that's another reason to do a post-abortive assessment, is that abortion complications can have a major impact on her future health and fertility. Untreated infection from a surgical abortion can cause scarring. And so then you think, well, then that can put her at risk for future ectopic pregnancy, and it can put her at risk for future miscarriage and or cervical insufficiency, infertility in the future. And so, okay, so we say, well, what about the abortion pill? If women take the abortion pill, wouldn't that avoid all of this potential side effects from a surgical abortion? But according to NIFLA, up to 7% of women require surgical completion of their medical abortion. So it's no guarantee that that she won't end up having a surgical procedure anyway. And then mail order abortion pills, as we just heard, are the wave of the future. And it can affect, so if a woman's getting abortion pills through the mail, she's not necessarily knowing if she's Rh positive or Rh negative. And so she's not getting the Rogam shot if she is Rh negative. And then if the baby is Rh positive and the blood mixes, then it can affect the future pregnancy if she has another Rh positive baby. So it's really putting her future fertility at risk too.
So we're going to look at the emotional and spiritual side as this as well. So we know there's lots of rational reasons for the medical part of it, but we're going to look at the spiritual and some of the emotional things. So I'm going to go ahead and share a little bit of my own testimony and to kind of give you a little bit of insight of what my experience was, but it may be even your own client. So I'm going to go ahead. I have it written out, and I just thought it might be a little bit easier. I'm going to go ahead and tell it, but story to keep me on track for our time's sake as well, too. So, you know, I was this client. You know, I was this woman that walks into your clinic, you know. I was scared, alone. I felt helpless in this situation, you know, trying to tell myself, you know, that it's going to be okay, that this is the right decision, not understanding the full decision that I was going to make. Like a lot of our clients, we are in a state of, you know, not thinking very good, you know, and so it's really hard to process things. But I didn't understand that this was going to be a lifelong decision. No one had really explained this to me. And you're in a crisis. So when you're in a crisis, you're not thinking correctly. You know, I'm too young. It's not the right time for me. It's not a baby, right? You know, I left the clinic with a high temperature that lasted for several days or longer, you know, feeling ashamed and horrified to go back to a place where I went to a health clinic, and you know, I was afraid to tell my parents, didn't even know about it, and I didn't want to go to some place and confide with these uncaring people. I didn't want to go back there. I had been horrified. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and so and my boyfriend really wasn't that caring or loving either. So, you know, this was a choice we both made, my boyfriend and I, and you know, we made it that day, and we're trying to make it seem like a simple decision. And I know a lot of our clients feel that way. And, you know, they say it's safe. They say it's no big deal. You know, it must be okay, right? It's legal. So, you know, I went by myself that day feeling alone and empty inside. You know, I say we were ignorant. We believed the lie without knowing the full truth. And I say a lot of our clients are that way as well. Afterwards, I will never forget the feeling of not understanding why I felt so wrong inside if they said it was nothing. Being in denial and afraid of my parents, you know, I didn't want to confide in them with being sick. You know, I'd always been pretty much the good girl of the family. I had some ornery brothers, and so I was always the good girl. And we had a lot of stuff going on in my family. So I confided in my coworker, and she was post-abortive as well, and she was more than eager to help me to get an appointment at the health department. So before I knew, I had an appointment, went to the appointment, and next thing I know, I was set up for a procedure. And again, you know, you were in that crisis mode, can't think well. I don't even remember hearing anything about abortion. But, you know, I didn't have a primary doctor. I didn't have an OB. You know, I wasn't on birth control because I wasn't thinking about having sex. And but before I know it, it just happened before I realized it. You know, I was 19. My boyfriend was about 4 years older than me. I just was in college, in junior college, and thought this is my true love. I didn't date much. We were just two broke college students. I didn't understand what a DNC was or the type of procedure that I was going to have. You know, I didn't know anything about the side effects that could happen after abortion, you know, medical complications, or the emotional side that is from it. you know, I don't remember any counseling at all. And sometimes our mind wants to block these things out, but I don't remember any of that. You know, I didn't know about the great centers that you guys all provide, a place like Advice and Aid, about the wonderful truths that we hear about abortion, or someone explaining it to us, or saying, hey, have your boyfriend come in, or offered a sonogram, or seeing that sonogram. I don't remember any of those things. I never knew about fetal development. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. So I really didn't know that much about God or the Lord, or that I was created in His image, but I knew inside that something was wrong, and I knew that God said it was wrong. I always tell my clients, and I know this for myself, that, you know, when you violate your own moral code, you know, your mind and your heart and your soul still know that you should be pregnant. And, you know, that's when these ladies come back right after they've had their abortions. They feel the worst of the worst, and they feel worthless. That's when the shame and the guilt comes in, and you feel like you've done the worst of the worst, like I said, but you start hardening your heart and your soul. That was me. I struggled for years with self-degrading thoughts and shame and guilt, and it was mine to keep, I felt. Years later, I did meet my boyfriend. We met at a bank, and I ended up getting married about 3 years later. I became an instant stepmom. I have three older daughters, and they were 3 and 5 when we met. And Christy was, 3 years later we met. And so Christy, Jenny, and Jesse had twins. And my husband, they did the opposite. They did the dad thing and the mom on the weekends. So they lived in my home, and I'm like, well, this is great. When the time is right, then we'll get pregnant. This is perfect. You know, how you think in your head. I know how many girls have probably told you that as well, too. So everything looked great on the outside, but not necessarily on the inside. You know, we had, if you know where Roland Park is, down by the plaza, all that, we had a cute Cape Cod house, doing good, 3 kids. Oh, time to have a baby, worked at a bank. And so, but I knew in myself, after years of trying to get pregnant, we struggled with to have a child. But I knew inside, I knew inside why I wasn't being blessed with a child. And it was really hard. I worked at a bank, and all the ladies there were pregnant. And then it became something I felt like I had to get pregnant. And I felt like that I didn't deserve a baby. I felt like that, you know, God was punishing me because of this. You know, that's when the shame and the guilt, we want to push it all down. But then when you want something like this, when you say it is the right time, that's when all this stuff kind of festers up. So every month of disappointment was really hard. You know, what was to be a quick procedure to be forgotten forever was lasting a lifetime. And, you know, it sticks its ugly head up here and there. You know, little did I know that this would affect my having children and for in the future, you know. And it's funny because we were sharing about this, and I just happened to remember this. You don't, sometimes you block out things you don't want to remember. But I remember I went in for a specialist, and he was going to check my tubes. And I remember him talking to the nurse, and he said, she's had a DNC. And I'm like, I don't know what a DNC is. So, you know, here I'm a married lady, and I was probably 30 or so, and wanting to have children now, doing infertility stuff to find out why I couldn't. So when I got back into the room, he goes, well, you had a DNC. And I said, no, I don't think so. He says, well, you have scar tissue. You've had an abortion. And boom, it just hit me what a DNC was. But I was ignorant. I didn't know what it was. And so I kind of went on with my life. And, you know, I became harder on myself. And I became kind of angry. And sometimes when you don't know what to do with the inside, you're trying to make the outside feel better. It's similar to what people do with cutting, but this is just what I did 35 years ago. Is I was bruising my arms to make myself feel better. I didn't know what to do with all the stuff inside that was now coming out. The physical pain in my body was overwhelming me. I was bruising myself on the outside to relieve the pain on the inside. And we know clients that come to us that way as well, too. You know, I was very numb. I felt worthless. I felt unworthy to have a child. You know, the tears didn't come anymore. but, you know, abortion is a dark secret. You know, the lies and the deceit, you know, that they don't want to tell you about all of the stuff that kind of goes with it. So, you know, I felt like I couldn't forgive myself. I felt like I wore that big A as, you know, everybody knew why I couldn't have children. And so, but, you know, we have a loving Savior. And I did because I could not have children and could not overcome this. I had loving parents that had met Christ like 10, 15 years prior to that. And I didn't understand at the time, like I said, I didn't grow up a Christian, but I seen their lives change when they accepted Christ. And I needed that. I knew that I could not continue to go. Was I suicidal? Not all the way, but I was getting there. And so, you know, it was years later that I realized I couldn't handle this anymore, and I did ask Christ into my life. And so I thought, oh, I did this, I'll get pregnant now, you know, how we do sometimes. And, you know, it still showed its ugly head up again and again. So just a couple great verses, you know. So I got on my knees that day and asked Jesus Christ into my heart to be my Savior. And I asked him to forgive me of my sins and to be my Lord and Savior. You know, I realized the bad choices I had made separated me from God. And the Bible tells us in Romans 5:8, for we have all sinned and fallen short of God's glory and his standards. And it tells us in Romans 10:9, if we confess with our mouths that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And so many other wonderful verses I could quote. But so you get that. So what I'd like to just leave you with a little bit, you know, I was that wounded woman. You know, this wounded woman needs you. You know, she needs physical, emotional help after her decision. She needs the love of Jesus, and you guys are the face of that. Where does she turn to, you know, for medical help or just to tell her story to someone to love on her for guidance and that's not going to judge her? And then, oh, you're welcoming me back after I've done something you've told me not to do, you know, and just to let her know that she's not alone, and just to educate her about post-abortion syndrome trauma. That, you know, that she can return and that she might not be ready for that healing now, but to recognize it in the future. I wish someone had stopped me and got that medical reference. Someone had stopped me from all of this self-abuse that I thought I was alone in. When I finally learned about post-abortive syndrome, I'd been a Christian for 10 years and no one talked about it in the churches. No one talked about it. And I had the little list I had, there was 12, and I had 10 out of that 12. And, you know, to stop the self-harmful ways before they get started. But to show her Christ, you know, and that's what we're all about as well, too. Like I said, it took me 22 years before I would realize women needed help from abortion. And women have side effects as a real thing. And that there is forgiveness at the foot of the cross. So that's what I want to leave you with. I kind of shared my testimony. I got my healing in 2005, and I had my birth. But, you know, God opened my mouth, and I have not been silent yet. So thank you,
Katie. Thank you for sharing that story with everyone.
This is still me, so I'll take a good drink. So I love this because you're building relationships, building long-lasting client relationships, and that's obviously what we want to do. We want to love on them. So you can see through my story that there's many emotional and spiritual needs that we want to do, but also the medical. But, you know, it shows that we care for them. We want them to come back. Confidential and safe place, and like we kind of stated earlier, they may have not told their parents, they may not have even told their boyfriend, you know, like me, I confided in way the wrong person. But this may be the first time, and we've kind of seen that, ladies, we've had several clients that they might come in and, you know, state with the nurse that they you know, oh, I'm doing great, I'm doing fine, let's make sure the medical part's good. And then when we get them in that room and say, what's going on, and we listen and we love on, then it comes out. And that's the first step of healing, is getting it out, letting them tell their story. And, you know, some of them, that's not all of them, but it's so needed. And if we can try to do that, it's so wonderful. And then another thing is that when she comes back and might have another pregnancy, unexpected pregnancy, or down the road 5-10 years, and when she decides she wants a child, she'll know where she can come to, and hopefully she'll pull out that post-abortive assessment list that we've showed her and not get on that and talk about so many other wonderful things. But we want to build that relationship and hopefully prevent other pregnancies. Statistics show is that by the age of 40, 50% of post-abortive women will have a second abortion. We want them to come back to us with their further unexpected pregnancies, and hopefully we can walk with them through this journey. Okay, emotional and spiritual wounds. Do we click this one? Pardon me. Okay. So one of the things you need to realize is that the chemical abortions are especially traumatizing because it makes them the abortionists, and I think we've all realized that, which is really sad. And some women experience symptoms right away, and some of them it'll be years later, and we're hearing horrifying stories. And, we may be the only person that they're going to tell that one client said that she stood in the tub for like hours as clots came out, and just horrifying. They're going home and doing this alone, which is so sad. So,
and they're having a lot of effects after. So,
90%. Yeah, go ahead.
You want me to? Okay, 90% suffer damage to their self-esteem. 50% begin or increase alcohol and drug use. 60% report suicidal thoughts. 28 attempt suicide. 50% report some symptoms of PTSD. And 52% feel pressured by others to have an abortion.
So this is all part of that post-abortive syndrome.
And a lot of them will associate with the PTSD, if you explain that post-abortive stress syndrome. If you say PTSD, what military men and women go through, the trauma, and their faces go, oh, I kind of get it now. Your body's been in a trauma.
And they know it instinctively almost, that resonates because they know they've been through a trauma. You can't go through an abortion
physically, emotionally, and spiritually
without realizing that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. This is actually the hardest part, how finding clients. We want to encourage the client who's already been in our center to come back, for sure. We'd also like to get the word out to the community that this service is available. And so we really just do education at every opportunity. We have a community outreach arm of our organization. And we really, anytime they speak, they're talking about our services, including our post-abortive services. So community outreach is a big thing, just so maybe they themselves aren't in need of healing, but they know somebody who is, and so that's helpful. We also have this is unique to our situation, but we have a gazebo in our parking lot, but it's right next to the parking lot of the abortion clinic, and so people come and take their breaks there. Fathers of babies go there and wait until she's done, especially during COVID when they won't let the dads inside. And so we have brochures there that talk about post-abortive healing. Probably a lot of these guys don't even know that that's something that she could face. And so if he can reach her, that the service is available, that's great. We also have all of our URLs up along the gazebo, so abortion pill reversal and all that stuff. So all of our post-abortive services are part of this brochure. We give literature to every client who comes into our office, of course, talking about all of our services, including the post-abortive ones. And that's abortion pill reversal, post-abortive assessment, and post-abortive healing. And then the nurses always make follow-up phone calls to abortion-minded clients, and we try to, if we find out that she's had an abortion, then we try to get her to schedule a post-abortive assessment. So this is kind of the nuts and the bolts of how the visit works, and this is the medical portion of the assessment. And then there's also an emotional and a spiritual portion of the assessment. So the medical part is done by a nurse, and it's, like I said, 4 to 6 weeks after the abortion. So we start on the medical side because that's kind of how we bill this service, as a medical service, and that's really what it is. But also we can provide the healing services too. So we start with the nurse, but the client advocate is also in the room. We always have two staff members in there, or two, at least a staff member, a volunteer in a room with the woman at all the time, available. So the first part of the visit is a pregnancy test. Obviously, if that's still positive, that's a very different conversation than if it's not. So we want to make sure that's a negative pregnancy test. And then the nurse will take a brief history of the abortion and the pregnancy history, and just a medical intake, basically. Then she'll do a set of vitals and make medical referrals as appropriate. This is just a copy of our form, which I know you can't see it very well. I lost my cursor, so I can't magnify it. But we're looking for things like her health history. How many times have you been pregnant before? When was your last period? When was the abortion? What type of abortion was it? Did you have any hemorrhage? How much were you bleeding? And if you took the pill, what was the timing between pills? We want to know things like that. We want to know about their educational needs. Was any information given to them about follow-up? And if so, what was it? And we want to know if they've been offered any post-abortive counseling. Of course, from the abortion clinic, the answer is no. Sometimes they'll give them information, but they don't always read it. And so we also want to know if they gave them any idea of when their fertility would return. And that's huge, because they don't know that you can't get pregnant right after an abortion. So it's important to assess what educational needs they have. And then we just do the current assessment. So that's where we take the set of vitals. And the things we do are temperature, pulse, respirations, blood pressure, and a hemoglobin, as well as the urine pregnancy test. Any questions about that? Okay. So these are our referral parameters. We developed these with the help of our medical advisory group, and those of you who heard me before, I talked a little bit about what our medical advisory group is. I really would encourage you, if you don't have one, to get one, especially if you're providing medical services. But it's just a multidisciplinary group of medical professionals. All of our nurses are part of it, as well as our medical director, who's an obstetrician. And then we have people from other specialties, too. Like, we have a pathologist on there, we have a radiologist, a pediatrician, and nurse practitioners. So just from all different specialties to advise us. We meet quarterly, and we can bring up, changes in policy and procedure with regard to our medical. They give us advice. They keep us accountable, make sure we're providing a good standard of care, and we can ask them questions. And the side benefit is that we have all these relationships with these doctors. So a woman, has a problem, and, we know a doctor who can do that. We got somebody for that. So, and then the doctors feel really invested in our ministry, too. So they want to see us succeed. They want to see us protected. And so they're really, really good about giving us great advice. So consider a medical advisory group. So hemoglobin less than 10 could indicate some kind of abnormal bleeding or low hemoglobin. Temperature greater than 100.4, pulse over 120, respirations over 24, blood pressure over 140, over 90, or a positive pregnancy test. Obviously, those would be reasons for outside medical referral.
All right, so the emotional and spiritual assessment. So this is the second part of it. So you've done all that. You realize that she's not pregnant, and she may have shared a little bit with the nurse and when the client advocate is in the room. So this is big to me. You want either all your staff to be trained to be able to do this, or you want someone that knows about post-abortive assessment, that has a sweet, precious heart, that's going to love on her. They're not going to be afraid of anything that she's going to say. When I first started, I had a lady that came back to us before we started doing this, and she said they treated me horribly. She went to the doctor. She was already showing some of the signs of, like, PTSD. she went in because she was having anxiety attacks, and she came back to us. We followed up with her, and I met with her, and she says one of the things that she saw her baby in a jar. Mm-hmm. And not every client advocate is going to be able to handle that. So I would say you need a client advocate or your staffing. And if you don't, we've talked about this too, you can go to Option Line and you can look up where your local, or if not, for Grace can tell you where the closest pregnancy center that has post-abortive healing. And they would be a person to either help train you or someone to call and say, hey, this lady's coming in, we're doing this, can you please help? So that is what I would love, for you to do. So then she's met with Katie, then we go into the counseling room and allow her to talk. You can ask her questions. And we've had ladies that come in and they're in there because they want to know just if their body's going to be back to normal, when it's going to be back to normal, when they can get a birth control, this kind of thing, or it's not going to ruin their fertility in the future. Then you have those that come back and they're just talking about their issue of what happened and why they did it. And then you have that girl that she comes in and she's broken. Mm-hmm. So the girl that comes in and she may not actually want to talk, and she's just wanting information. Then, just like you do, if they come in as if they're doing a pregnancy test and don't want information about parenting or about abortion, but you're sweet and you explain it very much too. Make sure, you're a millennium. I always say, please read this. so we do give them information to leave with. So you want to be sensitive to that and the Holy Spirit of, praying about that and letting lead that conversation. But I have had some wonderful conversations with these broken women. And some of them have been very sweet, like, I know I'm not going through that now, but thank you. You care about me. You're trying to help me here. So, this is when they are broken. This is a time, too, for the spiritual part of it, too, that, they are broken. And this is a good time that, can remind them how much God loves them and that they are a daughter of the King. And then just listen to them, and sometimes they have all these things that they do need help with, and we can give them referrals. And I've actually led several girls to the Lord doing this as well too, which is just so wonderful. But that's not the typical, as we all know, but it does happen. But this does give us the opportunity to love on them and to talk to them. So okay, so emotional and spiritual intake. So this is, we have an intake form as well, too. So this is great. And a lot of your information you can get from her request for services. You can find out whether she's a Christian. She may or not have put that on there. But read her background, know her chart, know her, And most of the time we do that, but sometimes we get a little busy. But make sure you do the appointment when you're going to have somebody there staffing to do it. We started... when we did them, this is a certain day, Kelly's going to be here, we know this person, make sure that you're doing it then too. But you can find out these things and know whether she's still with the boyfriend or the boyfriend left, know whether parents are, invest in her before you start talking to her. So a lot of the things that you learn when you talk to her, this is just to kind of guide you, not to check off. But you want to make sure she's not suicidal. And these are the things that I'm not sure if we addressed it in that or not. But
these are signs of post-abortive syndrome.
Yeah, whether she's suicidal or not. And, the nurse will ask her that in the counseling room. And then whether she has been self-harming, Just ask her. These are things, and how she's doing, and making sure that she is able to. What I think we have learned is that a lot of times, 2 weeks in that time frame when they're still bleeding, a lot of these things might come through their mind. They don't have a plan. I know a lot of you guys, if you don't know that much about suicide, this would be a great time to take a class. I took a class from Alliance for Life a couple years ago. It was so helpful. So knowing that is wonderful too. So some of these things they might think about, but they're not doing that. They're not harming themselves. They might be crying a lot. They might be doing that. But after 4 to 6 weeks, if they're still doing these things, they need help. And this is when you can talk to them, love on them, tell them about post-abortion syndrome. But if they're not back to going to work, but they're not back to going to college. They're just staying at home. They're continuing to cry, using drug and alcohols. If you see a lot of shame and guilt start welling, you know, we can do what we can, but they might need to go to someone professional. We have a lady that we refer them to that she's a professional counselor, plus she also deals with post-abortive syndrome as well, too. So, but if, you know, she says anything, I know you guys know about suicidal thoughts. So you're taking all of that, you come into the room, you've looked her up, you know these things. So then you can have that spiritual talk with her. And if she's interested, if, you know, she wants more information, you might just be getting a little tidbits, you know, prompting you to talk to her about that. And we have literature we give her. Looking for love all in the wrong places. It's a beautiful little scripture, trying to find that love from a guy or instead of your heavenly father. We have the post-abortive syndrome, Are You at Risk? Healing the Hurt booklet, Focus on the Family. A lot of you guys probably have that. And then Father No More is one that you can also give to if the father is hurting. That looks a little different. But one we found that is kind of neat is that this is a great opportunity, if they're still on board with you, listening and talking, you know, talk to them about their relationship with the boyfriend. You know, are you still being sexually active? You know, are you still with him? You know, have you thought about, you know, sex-free dating? You know, this is a great time to say, hey, this was an unplanned pregnancy. The abortion was horrifying. No, take hold of your own sexuality. And we have some great talks then too. What are your plans going forward? You know, make a plan before you meet with your boyfriend, or maybe this is not the right guy. You know, so having these wonderful conversations with them. And then if they will come back and meet with you, they might be, and we've had ladies that come in and you can see a lot of these signs and they're overwhelmed. Hey, I'll be here next Tuesday, this same time, come back next week, or when can you come back? And a lot of times, they'll make the appointment, they always come back, but they've shared right then and there. And, you know, a lot of times, and put them back on your follow-up, however, between, you know, a month or two, and say, how are you doing? And one of the things I would suggest is, if you can't, just meet with them and let them come back in and share their story. No one's maybe listened to them. No one's, you know, so this is a great opportunity as well.
And really, if they don't feel like talking, that's fine. That's mm-hmm. totally fine. But we really want them to be aware of these red flag behaviors, because it might not crop up, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the abortion. It may take until they have a wanted pregnancy, and then some of these things start yeah. cropping up. And so if they know about them in advance, they could say, oh, that lady said that, and I think that's what's happening. I need some help. So the idea is maybe they'll get help sooner. And with the abortion pill and how it does turn women into their own abortion doctor, that's the hope, that they'll realize that they need help sooner rather than somebody else did this to me, I did this to myself, and I'm going to need some help. In fact, we've had women who were considering abortion say, can I just schedule an appointment to meet with somebody because I know I'm going to need some help? And we're like, oh, honey, let's prevent, you know, the thing that's going to cause you to need the help. So we've learned a lot in the course of doing these since 2018. We haven't done that many, but of our first four post-abortive assessments, three of them had retained product and had needed a D&C after that. Three out of the four first ones that we saw. So that's a lot, and that's something that may not have been found if they hadn't come in. So how many women are not finding that out?
What was the
vaccine?
Was it the
meeting? It was before my time. I don't remember.
It just depended. Some of them had a fever, or the test was positive, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So then they got referred to the OB for further evaluation.
So and complications are more common than we thought.
I want to jump in on that because I had several of those clients I took and went to our OB doctor and sat with them. And it was that she was continuing to be pregnant, showing that she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And what did they tell her, Ruth? Didn't they tell her just to take another pregnancy test and when it says negative, then you'll be fine? And that's what they told her. Yeah. And she, yeah.
So pregnancy complications are more common than we thought. Also, A lot of women aren't told or don't understand that they need follow-up care. Women don't always read the literature they're given, obviously. Yeah.
During this follow-up with the nurses, do you do a pelvic exam?
We do not. No, we do not. We're not set up for that.
All right. Can I just say what we would do if they had a positive test is then we refer them to our medical doctor over our clinic.
And increasingly, women are being told to manage their symptoms at home, and so that just increases their feelings of isolation and shame associated with all of this, what they're already feeling. We've also gained valuable insights into clients' abortion experiences. We've had clients leave the little white bag, you know, that they were given. We've had them tell horror stories that are just, it just breaks your heart to hear about them. But hearing about their experiences helps us to help them better, and it helps us to help the next woman better. Able to see.
What do you mean the little white bag? What's
that? The abortion pills come in. So we see the literature that they're given. We see the recommendations that they're given for aftercare, when to take the second pill. You know, it's not fun reading. So we've had clients tell us they were treated badly. One was forgotten in a room for 2 hours.
Oh.
And then she just left and came over to our place.
Oh, good.
One woman called the abortion clinic about excessive bleeding and was told to massage her own uterus and put a heating pad on her belly. And another woman was told to take a second set of abortion pills right after she got home, like the second pill, instead of the FDA guidelines of waiting at least 24 hours. Clients called 6 weeks after taking the abortion pill with abdominal and lower back pain, but she was unable to reach the provider because they were closed and they didn't have a hotline or anybody on call to take her phone call. And then another got abortion pills through the mail and came in a month later because she was still pregnant. And on and on and on and on and on and on. So what we've learned from clients themselves has been very valuable experience for us. So you may be asking, in talking about post-abortive services with clients who haven't even aborted yet, aren't you encouraging abortion by talking about it? And so for this, we look kind of to the suicide model. We can look to that as an example, because people used to really fear that talking about suicide was going to increase the suicide rate. And really, when the research was done, the opposite was true. They found that acknowledging and talking about suicide actually reduced the suicide rate rather than, and it led to improvements in mental health overall. So letting women know what to expect after an abortion shows we love her, not just her baby, because it's not loving to keep people in the dark about what could possibly happen to them and potential complications. Knowing that there are so many adverse outcomes may even plant seeds in her that help her rethink, help her decide, maybe I don't want to go through with this abortion. So we think it's really important to talk about it. Plus, it gives us the opportunity to talk about abortion pill reversal and the potential to save the baby if she changes her mind, and also the need for healing, because maybe she doesn't even realize that she's going to need emotional healing after this, and that it's okay to seek that out. So who can do a post-abortive assessment? Obviously, for the clinical part, you're going to need a nurse or other medical professional. And then most of these you probably already have in your clinic. So you're going to need a client advocate who's trained to talk to post-abortive women. And like Kelly said, there's some really good programs out there and where you can get training on that. It doesn't have to be a post-abortive woman either. That's a common myth. You can talk very successfully to post-abortive women, even if you're not post-abortive yourself. All you have to do is have the gift of mercy, really, and be able to speak truth and love into her heart. And then it's really important to have a relationship with a local life-affirming doctor who you can send these women to for complications and when they're their vitals fall outside of the parameters. And then on the mental health side, counselors that can really help them if they're needing more psychological intervention than you can provide at your center. Any questions about that?
I have one. So for the referrals, it's so hard to get into any of these people just if you're on the street. So how quickly can you get them in to see a doctor or a counselor?
This is where those relationships really come into play. Mm-hmm. And if you're fortunate, you can have somebody on your speed dial. Let's say, here, I have this lady here who's having a problem. Can you get her in? And we're very blessed to have that relationship established with our doctor. And he's like, yes, I'm on. So, should your center offer this service? We think they should. We think that you should. It's not just for the big clinics, because as you saw, I don't know how many of you were listening to the, was he a lawyer in there talking about the,
lobbyist.
Talking about how, okay, Missouri's abortion stats have gone way down, but the abortion stats in general have not gone down, so they're going somewhere. Mm-hmm. They may be coming to us and then coming back to you. Mm-hmm. And so, many women leave their own communities to get abortions elsewhere, whether medical or surgical. And they will be returning to your town broken and hurting, and they won't necessarily come back to the big cities to follow up. So even the small centers can really reach these post-abortive women, and that could be a wonderful ministry for your center. The increased availability of the abortion pill by mail means that a lot of these women won't even be leaving your town in the first place to go get an abortion. And they are totally isolated, except for Google, which is giving them all kinds of misinformation. And so they're going through this trauma all by themselves with nobody to talk to. And another reason that we think it's a great idea to offer post-abortive services is because we all know that God can use our pain for his glory. And women are sometimes the most receptive to healing and amending their lives when they are broken. So, in conclusion, we'd just like to offer you some encouragement to be not afraid. This is a beautiful service to offer for planting seeds. Rest assured, it's not going to take over your ministry. It's a supportive service. So we started it in 2018, and we've done 26 post-abortive assessments. That's not that many, really. So, example, in July, we get a lot of them to schedule post-abortive assessments, but they don't always show up for them. So in July, for example, 6 people scheduled post-abortive assessments, but only 2 showed up. So that's not an overwhelming number, but just reaching out with the service shows that you care about them, because they know that you know that they don't have a baby anymore. And so it's really just caring about them, and that says a lot to them. So we always say we're available to the 99, but really we're there for the one. And so if you just serve one woman with post-abortive services, it's worth it.
I'm just going to jump in and say, a lot of times I would do those follow-up calls, and I would have a 20, 30-minute conversation with them, and their ears are open, and that is the same thing as, to me, it was as being in the clinic and them sitting there, and you're able, if you realize they're not going to come in and they start talking to you on the phone, you can use that same person. Hey, let me, you know, the nurse can refer you, or the nurse is comfortable. Hey, let me transfer you to this person, and or can I call you right back, or however. But yeah, I had some great conversations with these ladies. Even if you don't get them into the clinic, you know how to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Right before you mentioned that, I was going to ask about how you handle the referrals. Do you do it any other way besides the direct phone call? I'm all for that, and I do that, but do you use HopeSync in any way, any kind of digital follow-up?
We have a discharge instruction, and it you know, gives the recommendation. So we never want to give the impression that we're providing ongoing care, right? So that's why we have a discharge instruction. So on that discharge instruction, it explicitly spells out a recommendation, like you need to seek a medical care immediately, follow up with your gynecologist at your normal appointment, or whatever our recommendation is. If it's an urgent thing, then we are on the phone with our doctor trying to get them in that day. And then we still discharge him, and then the client becomes under his care at that point. The other reason not to be afraid is that it's not that expensive to start it. Really, you probably have most of what you need in the office already. except maybe a hemoglobin machine. I think they're about $600. And frankly, if you didn't take a hemoglobin, you know, they'll, and you see a fever or something, if you're doing these other sets of vitals and you see a problem, they'll do that at the doctor's office too. So even if you wanted to just get started without having that available, that would be a possibility too. So just encourage you to take courage and think about starting some kind of post-abortive physical assessment in your centers. Do you have any questions for us?
Do you have this information available?
I do. You know, I have cards up here. I didn't print it for everybody, but I have my cards, and I can send it to you if you want to email me. I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. I think you had mentioned books or, like, reading material real quickly, though.
Yeah, and I apologize. I did not bring them with me. But
no, that's
one
okay.
Is,
I do have a resources page here.
Yeah.
I just want to get, like, there we go.
There you
okay.
go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. The good news track. Yeah, looking for love in all the wrong places. That's a great one.
Others? Yeah.
I just want to. I have never faced the issue of abortion myself. I don't trust. I have a friend who financed and had his two different. Beautiful women in his life before he was married. He encouraged and paid for their abortions. Mm-hmm. He told me how he experiences shame and guilt for most of his life. Mm-hmm. He's in his 60s now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only by the grace of God that he found true healing.
Yes.
They're the big invisible, aren't they? The men.
Not for Grace right here has men that are mentoring to men. It's real hard for them to come in, but if you need a resource.
Well, he's come to a personal, close, intimate relationship with the Lord, and that has changed his life completely.
Okay.
He
had
been messed up all his lifetime until he accepted Christ. It's such a, to me, He says it's such a spiritual issue that he needed the Lord to forgive him. And when the Lord gave him,
that's what my testimony was.
Then he feels.
Yeah. Because Satan wants to leave you there.
Set free him.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
One time, many years ago, I was listening to several, this is when I focused on family, and James Dobson was leading it. And it was a several issue at times when they were interviewing women who had abortions. And they were relating to that they went into the abortion thinking that, well, this is just something common. They were confused. They felt like they needed to is only the only path. And one thing that they said is leading up to the abortion, they just said, well, let's just have my need to do it. But the first thing that came to their minds after they did that, the enemy said, you killed your child.
Yeah.
And that's the guilt of people.
He's the accuser, so,
Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. Mm-hmm. I've been a Christian for 10 years, wearing that shame and guilt. Mm-hmm. Then when I started doing this at my own church, post-abortive ladies started coming from Advice and Aids, referral. Those ladies need to take a post-abortive class. Mm-hmm. So I got my own healing. And then when it started talking about, you know, Jeremiah, I knew you and left you in the womb, and, you know, in Psalms 139 and all those beautiful, oh my gosh, I realized what I had done. And, you know, but then when I got my own healing, God showed me that he did forgive me and that I was radiant. And mm-hmm. so, yes, you do, you can't atone for your own sins. And I was trying to do that. Mm-hmm. And he wants to keep us in bondage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but if you're, awesome books, I'm trying to think of the book we have for men. You have one at your table.
Healing the Father.
Healing mm-hmm. the Father is mm-hmm. great. And him just reading that, and it may just be another level of healing mm-hmm. for him. Because ladies tell me that all the time. I'm okay. I've got my healing. I'm done. I'm like, oh, but you... you need that. It is so, God can do so much more with you when you get all, God showed me it was like cancer eating up inside of me if I didn't get it out. And so, well, thank you so much for sharing, because men do. They suffer just as much. So
you're, and for that reason, that we started a men's ministry within the ministry. So we have male client advocates that meet with the men, hoping that if she does go ahead and abort, that they have a place to come to us. And we have. It's so tragic. It's happened a couple of times where our male client advocate's there and a guy comes over because his girlfriend's over there and he doesn't want that for her. Yeah. He doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. But he's powerless to do anything about it. Yeah. And just needed somebody to talk to. So, it's very sad. Yeah.
Do you ever have generationals, family members that come in, like mother brings her daughter and mother's had an abortion and feels like...
We had it the other day. It was the mother of the father of the baby coming. The girl's mom didn't know. I said, honey, you need to tell your mama. And so, it was complicated.
We don't, I mean, you guys may do this in
your clinic. She's had her own abortion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys may do this in your own clinic, but we have them stay outside. We treat it like a medical, like you would when you go for an appointment, and we don't have them, and then we ask them if they want who their partner, the FOB, or you know, someone like that, because sometimes, or even a friend, you know, it could just snap when they come in the room, and but sometimes not, but you have to kind of fill them out, and then sometimes someone comes from inside the office, starts talking to them, and go, what a good deal. So, yeah.
Other questions?
I can't stand it.
I know you can't read it.
I'm very passionate about this service, even though, again, we're not going to see a whole bunch of people, and we're not going to tell them. I want to make sure you understand, we're not encouraging to abort. And we are at a place, because of our location, that we have women who have appointments in 5 minutes, that kind of thing. But the reason I want to encourage you about this, and I really want our ladies to come and present, it's because they're going to your home. This is one of those services, mythbusters, that we don't care about the woman. This is a mythbuster support service. Mm-hmm. They're going to go to whatever town you live, and they're going to not want to go back to Kansas City or wherever they're at. They're not going to. That's what Abby Johnson said. And many times it costs an additional $100 to get that follow-up. So it's medical, it's financial, but it's this emotional thing of going back to that place where that happened. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we have a tremendous opportunity to tap into something where we can reach this women. If you go to the abortion pill reversal, they're bleeding at home again, and they're gonna have. They're told to go to the emergency room, and it'd be great if they knew there was a place in their hometown where they can go and be cared for, even if they end up at a doctor's office again. So I just wanted to share that with you, especially after Sam shared those numbers, because it's anyway.
Yeah. Thanks, Ray.
Do you know the numbers of, as far as percentage of abortion providers who even offer follow-up care? Is that, I mean, I know it's a standard of care, but is that something that
they're told to call? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they do. I know the literature that we've seen, they're told to follow up if there's a problem or call, but we've heard from clients that sometimes they're told to just go to the ER.
What if you have an accidental interaction with a post-abortion woman, meaning they come in because they are pregnant again, and maybe it's been a year or more, and they do tell you that they've had an abortion? How do you treat that and maybe try to spark conversation in that?
Kelly, you want to address that, because it happens a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does happen a lot. And, you know, some ladies, we ask them how many, you know, when we're doing our intake form, you know, and that kind of gets you an idea whether they are post-abortive or they've had some miscarriage or other things, you know, but a lot of times they'll say, have you had any other pregnancies? Well, yes, I did have an abortion or this or that. And that gives you an opportunity to say, well, you know, if you would like to, we have someone on staff or we have someone here that can help you. Would you like some more information about that? Because you don't know the lady in front of you. She may be afraid and having symptoms of, oh my gosh, I just have to abort, you know, like they want to get pregnant like atonement child right away. And then Satan comes in and said, you're a bad person. You can't be a mom. And then they do it again. So some of them come in and they'll be okay. But if they want to talk to somebody, go ahead and give them that or give them contact information. Hey, Kelly's right up there. She'd be happy to talk to you. Or would they come back for a sauna? How are you doing? I know, you know, you had one in the past. Are you still doing okay? A lot of ladies don't want to talk right then and there. But you know about it, and it's a good sign that they're more vulnerable and determined, and there's some things. And sometimes I would just get asked to come in. Sometimes I'll talk to them, and they would be willing to share a little bit about that. So,
yeah. And just to know that some of the feelings that they're feeling with this second pregnancy are normal. You know, mm-hmm. It's normal to for some of those feelings to come back up when you're pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Just put their mind at ease, and also to know that we're not judging them for their past actions, and they can move on
exactly.
from it.
Exactly, yeah.
It's really important for them to know, to be able to be rejoicing with their new pregnancy. Yeah.
Could you confirm, please, you said you make referrals, so would you, since you know people's addresses when they come to you, would you refer them to one of the various access centers in the state of Missouri, if they gave you written permission to do that?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that is something you generally attempt.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I appreciate
it. Yeah.
I was going to say this option line is wonderful. If you guys don't use it, you really need to be using it, because we have ladies for our center. They'll come to us and they'll think that they're going into Planned Parenthood, but they come to us by mistake, or they decide a last chance they might just come over because they see it. And I'll go, oh my gosh, they're like, how far is this? I'm 2 hours, 3 hours away. And then I'll go, you know what? I'll get you a pregnancy center, have someone up front, or you look it up, and you give them the closest pregnancy center to them. And so they have a referral. And I'll say, when you know they're determined, you can say, you might call them, and they'll help you. Because we don't know if they go ahead and do it. Sometimes we call them, and I'll be like, hey, call your pregnancy center and let them know. And they can do some follow-up care. So...
And that's how you term it usually. Aftercare.
Yeah, aftercare. You need aftercare, and so yeah.
So, of your 26 people that you help, yeah. Have you had an opportunity to share the gospel? I just ask, as you said that you kind of dealt with yours after you became a believer, mm-hmm. right? And I have a very good friend, sister in Christ, that did the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, is that? I don't know. It,
so I was. Like 30 when I got saved and 40 when I started to, so I'm telling you my age, but, but you know, so these are not ladies that are going to take a Bible study. These mm-hmm. are right. ladies that you're going to share truth with them, and you're going to plant some of those wonderful seeds. Mm-hmm. We had a lady that went through our kind of like Bridges programming, mentoring program, and then she came back because we were offering this type of thing to them, mm-hmm. and I talked to her and really helped her with that and shared Christ with her. Mm-hmm. You know, I she said she already knew Christ, but I shared some really truth with her. Then we had another meeting, and this girl's like, I know about religion. I said, I'm not talking about religion. Stop the PowerPoint. We're talking about a personal relationship with Christ. And we were able to lead her to Christ. And then I've had other times that I have prayed in the centers with these ladies. So it can be just a beautiful thing. Not all of them that's going to happen, but, and I would keep Bibles.
Well, I'll ask for a Bible.
I would go and get a Bible. Like, do you have a Bible? You know, I'll go get you a Bible. And yeah, so yeah. Yes.
I'm a post-abortive mother, and I say mother because I know my children are waiting for me in heaven.
Amen.
And I know that my guilt and shame were taken from me by Christ's precious blood on the cross. Uh-huh. 16 years ago, mm-hmm. but it was just this year that I sought help because
yes.
I kept saying, Lord, you've let it go. Why can't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so...
So you took a post-abortive Bible study?
I actually, at the same time I was really having a lot of stress about it, a local church was doing grief share.
Okay.
And so the Lord led me to take the class at grief share. And that was just a tremendous experience, because I feel that he is leading me into what you're doing, Kelly. And you know, it's not until that you
if not for Grace is a wonderful ministry
over and over and over again, and the creature they make you kind of every time you have a meeting, why are you here? Who are you breathing? And I remember, like, the fourth class in, I was driving there going, Lord, I'm just not going to tell them I aborted my children. I'm just going to tell them I lost two of my children. I can't do this every single time I drive in there. I've got, you know, eight more classes ahead of me. And in his sweet, small voice, he said, but Destiny, you'd be denying what I gave you, what I did for you. And so I was like, you're right. And so ever since then, every class, I had to speak that. And it was a huge part of my healing process. Everyone was extremely gracious. And I thank you for speaking up. You know, this male voice and a sea of ladies here for you to share your heart is precious. And what a good friend you are to advocate for your friend. And I think that's a big part of it, is that even though we know we're forgiven, we still have to take steps to heal the grief and loss that we maybe didn't years. I mean, this was 38 years ago for me. So there's still peace. He wants to heal us in every way. Not just to take our shame and our guilt, but to be able to pass it on, like 1 Corinthians 1,
the 3, same, 4. The same compassion that we've received, we give to others. So that's right.
And naming it and diagnosing it, just like in the medical field, you have to diagnose it before you can heal it. So,
but going through, I would go through someone that's right beside you. I know I've been doing it for I don't know how many long, and this lady over here said something that I thought I was crazy that I had gone through. So someone that's been there, and another post-abortive woman reading Sidney Massey's book, Her Choice to Heal, or there's other ones out there too. Nothing like going through it with another post-abortive lady. And like I said, God showed me it was like cancer. It was eating up inside of me. And he can't use us when we have all this inside of us. So, but it sounds like you got some wonderful healing. But just further reading some stuff, I would just definitely recommend that. So wonderful.
Okay. So, well, we're available after if you have further questions or more personal questions. Feel free to come up after and feel free to take my card.
Thank you for sharing, by the way. Appreciate that.